it's like, well, if I throw a mic on, then I can help others the way that these people have all helped me.
Born in the heart of the Pennsylvania Deer Camp, with the help of experts, friends, and local legends, we bring you valuable knowledge and powerful stories for your hunting adventures. Welcome to the East Meets West Hunt Podcast with your host, Bo Martoni.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt Podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by Brandon Miller of the Everyday Outdoorsman. Brandon is an avid Pennsylvania hunter who spends every weekend he can in the woods. We discuss Brandon's YouTube channel, his 2023 deer hunting season, a still hunting strategy that works really well, different methods for getting a deer out of the woods, mountain laurel bedding, deer camp, hunting in September in Maryland, building his own traditional bow, and much more. 100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsman, outdoor enthusiast, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first day. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming out of Pennsylvania from Jeff Gensheimer. So Jeff wrote in, "This is a short story about when I took this buck on public land a few years ago. I had spent most of my hunting career being an urban bow hunter and becoming really good at it, but I had never seen huge bucks. We lost permission on a few small farms we hunted after being sold. I was forced to spend more time in the mountains of Northeast PA on public ground. I spent a lot of time scouting in and out of season trying to learn, but everyone knows how much it takes to be good on public land. I definitely didn't even come close to cracking the code when I shot this buck. After two seasons, I finally found a spot along a beaver brook coming out of a swamp. It was a spot that had lots of sign, but most of the deer movement was at dark. One day I told myself I was going to sit all day. It was the last day of archery season. It was late run, and I knew I had to do something. So I sat all day instead of getting out of the woods like I usually do midday. At around 11 a.m., I had a few does come running out of the swamp, being chased by smaller but respectable deer that I was more than willing to take. I tried to stop him, but to no avail. He just skirted around me, chasing after those does. A few minutes later, I heard feet going through the mud and water and thought maybe that was him coming back. And next thing I knew, I saw a much bigger set of antlers slowly making his way up the beaver run. And I thought, well, that's a much bigger deer. So for a half hour, I watched this deer in complete zombie mode take his good old time and finally come into range. I took the shot and watched the arrow drop much faster than I wanted to, but I just snuck it in there. I was sick to my stomach thinking that I just wounded that deer by making a bad shot. I couldn't find the arrow and I didn't find much blood, but I looked a little further up the trail and that buck was lying there, staring at me, shaking like a leaf, like he was mortally injured. I was able to put a second arrow into him and I just remember his head falling over and I lost my mind. He ended up scoring 150 inches. That hunt taught me to stay all day when you can. You never know when the woods will break out. Congratulations, Jeff. That is an absolute tank of a deer here in Pennsylvania. And it's basically a giant mainframe 8 with two inlines that come out of the G2s on each side. And it's just such a cool deer. Big deer, and awesome story too. It seems like you're on a really good start there for hunting mountain bucks. So congratulations, Jeff. I appreciate you sending that in. If anybody wants to check out Jeff's buck, you can head over to Instagram at East Meets West Hunt or Facebook East Meets West Outdoors and see the photo of it and read the story there as well. If you want to submit your mountain buck Monday story, please send it in to my email, bow@eastmeetswesthunt.com, put in the title, Mountain Buck Monday, and then just short paragraph or two story and some photos that go along with it. Would love to be able to share it in a future episode. With that said, I don't really have any other news this week, but I appreciate everybody listening so much, and your support helps. And I love getting all the questions coming in. Got some cool things planned for some future episodes. So if you find this podcast helpful, I really appreciate it if you share it with your friends, family, or anyone else that you think could benefit from it. And subscribe and give a rating and review wherever you listen to it. And let's jump into this episode here with Brandon Miller. All right, we're live. Brandon Miller, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to talk to you. We were just chatting beforehand, and it's funny because I had watched some of your videos on YouTube, the Everyday Outdoorsman, and your channel there. And every year when I go to clean my flintlock, your video is one I have saved in a playlist that I go to watch and just remind myself. You know, it's something I do really once a year. So it's like, mm-hmm. I always forget the little things, and it's a super to the point and easy video to follow along with. And I think you'd made that years ago, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's probably 5-6 years ago now. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so you had sent in a Mountain Buck Monday story back in December, And I'd responded to you. And once it was up in line here this week as we're recording it to go and post it. And I was like, why does this guy look familiar? And then you had said something about your page there and you'd link the video. That's what it was. You'd link the video to it. And I watched the video of you when you were out hunting for the deer that you submitted in the story. And that's what it was funny. I was like, oh yeah, I know. I've watched this guy before and liked the videos and thought process there. So I appreciate you taking the time to come on. And really it was on like, you know, kind of like one day's notice. I think it was like Sunday night or something. I was emailing you. And I'm like, hey, would you want to come on the podcast? And you're like, yeah. And I was like, let's do it.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Pretty cool. But anyways, Brandon, do you want to give a little bit of a background on who you are and then a little bit your background with hunting and then with the YouTube channel there?
Sure. So my name is Brandon Miller. I am from southeastern Pennsylvania. I am an engineer by day. And while we're here today, I'm a deer hunter, avid deer hunter. I really enjoy archery hunting. I've dabbled in recurve hunting quite a bit, probably 8 years of recurve hunting and compound hunting. I really just enjoy archery hunting specifically. I still go out rifle hunting and have been hunting since 2007 when I was 12. That was when I started deer hunting. And yeah, my wife and I live down here. We have a young daughter. And just absolutely enjoy talking deer hunting and just getting into the nitty gritty of it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And then what about like with the YouTube channel specifically, the Everyday Outdoorsman? Because that's you. I mean, you have videos on there from a long time ago. As far as you've been doing it for a while, it seems like.
Yeah. So my buddy Grant, he started the Everyday Outdoorsman, which it wasn't the Everyday Outdoorsman back then, but he started that in 2010. And we didn't start taking our cameras into the woods until 2011, and we've been filming for YouTube ever since. So it's been quite a while. We've been putting out a ton of content over the years and just really enjoying the process. I can't imagine going into the woods anymore without a camera. I feel naked doing that. And I enjoy the process of the hunt, the self-filming, and then taking all that footage back and creating something that hopefully people will want to watch. And we just try and do that day in and day out each year, and trying to put the best content out there. And we just absolutely love it. When we started, the goal was to show our family and friends, this is what we're doing. And now over 100,000 subscribers, there are people across the world that are watching us, which is pretty cool, and hoping to continue to grow and reach more people and just influence the hunting industry in a positive way. There's a lot of things going on that are great in the hunting industry, and there's some things that are going on in the industry that I think are poor and getting out of hand a little bit. And we're trying to have a positive impact and just have a voice for the industry as a whole.
Yeah. And I think that's really cool, especially with the from the Pennsylvania aspect of it. And the fact that one thing I want to note is I feel like I get asked quite a bit from people about starting a YouTube channel or starting a podcast or whatever it is. And you're a perfect example, or you and Grant and whoever else is involved with there are perfect examples of what it takes to do that. And that's a lot, doing it for a long period of time and just learning from it and showing, you know, who you are. It's not, you know, there's no acting that's involved. I mean, the videos that you put out, they're raw, they're real. And I like that aspect of it. But the biggest thing that I think from a piece of advice standpoint for anybody that's looking to do that is this isn't something that is not, and I'd love to hear your thought process too, but it's not something that's going to happen overnight, and it's something that takes a lot of time and a lot of work to be able to grow something that's that successful. And from the sounds of it, that really wasn't even the plan for you guys. And I think a lot of people that do well with it, that's kind of the case. Is it, you know, it comes out of the love of doing it and sharing those types of things and it, to go from there. And what I really get out of the feel of it is just, you know, everyday guys, which is obviously part of the name, but just showing, you know, the deer camp aspect of it, the culture aspect, all the work that goes into it, and then just some of the DIY stuff and everything that that you like to do, but what are your thoughts on that part of it?
Yeah, so absolutely, just like you said, I mean, our goal is to talk to and give content to the everyday outdoorsman. That is our goal. We're trying to relate to those people. And going back to maybe some of those people that are interested in starting a YouTube channel, don't go out and buy a $5,000 camera, a $1,000 tripod, and all this editing software. Start small. I mean, you don't even know if you're going to enjoy it. I see it so often on social media where guys are trying to sell their entire filming equipment because they didn't like filming their hunts. It was just too cumbersome. Start small. See if you like it. It is a lot of work. We've been absolutely grinding these last couple of years, just trying to grow. And it took us the better part of probably 8 to 9 years until we really started to see that exponential growth of where we are today. And we were absolutely grinding, like I said, through those first couple of years and not seeing a whole bunch of growth. And then once it started to take off, it just really took off. And in this last year, we've actually doubled in size. And it just comes down to putting out content that people want to enjoy and putting it out often. And we just absolutely enjoy it and honestly can't believe where we are today. And we hope and pray that it continues because we enjoy it so much.
Yeah. And two, one thing that I've learned from it is when I started self-filming hunts, which is something that I can't say I totally enjoy. I'm starting to love it a little bit more. Or I'm starting to like it a little more. But when I first started, I did not love it. But it's because of the learning curve of getting through it and setting up your equipment. It's more work. You got to do that. And it's like every time I'd get a shot, I could never get it on film. And I'm still not at that point. But what I've learned is that it's not the whole part of it. Like I learned that from two videos I had put out of deer hunting in Pennsylvania. And I was like, oh man, I didn't have my camera on for when I shot the deer. And the other one, it just ran out of frame basically. And I was like, no one's going to want to watch this. But when you put together a compelling story and something that people still want to watch, you know, it still did really well. And, you know, and even like with your buck in Pennsylvania from this past year, the half rack that you shot that it had shed its antlers, like that's a perfect example of that too. Like got to see like the process of you going out with your buddy and still hunting and doing everything there, but like the actual shot wasn't in the video, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But then you saw the pack out and like all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that's what's cool to me. And like, there's also the learning aspect of it that people can pull from. And that's just something that, again, if people are worried about that part of it, just that's not something to be too concerned with. And it's more for me, it's just like, I really want to have that. Like, it's not even what other people think from it. Like, I want to have that captured on film, but you know,
yes,
at some point I definitely put myself as a hunter before a filmer, so that's like that'll probably always be a detriment of mine.
Yeah, and I would almost put myself in that too. Like the shot, I really want to get the shot, but I'm not going to pass up a buck or even a doe if I don't have it on film. I'm still going to shoot the doe and still try and portray that story. My two biggest bucks, I don't have on film, but I made a video out of it and tried to portray the story and capture the essence of that hunt, the emotion, and just the rawness of it. And I think people still really enjoy that because it's real and it's not fake. It's not manufactured. It's the realness of that hunt, trying to capture it in a video for people to watch.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. You know, from the aspect of that the video that I watched, I guess, when was it, yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever that you sent over from this recent hunt. So I'd like you I told it on the Mountain Buck Monday part of it, but I want to hear it kind of from your thought process. And really let's kind of start with last season and kind of from the beginning and going through it and talking a little bit about how your season went and then kind of how it all ended up with that day.
Yeah, so we actually start hunting middle of September out of state. We hunt Maryland quite a bit, and that's where we spend the better part of September. and then even into October. We hunt there all year long because the season's longer. So I spent most of my time down there. Shot a doe early on in the rut. Then the first week, actually it was Halloween, I shot a buck down there as well. Nothing huge, just a nice public land 6-point. And then in rifle season is actually where I harvested the most amount of deer in rifle that I've ever have. Up in northern PA in Potter, we have a cabin. This will actually be our 53rd year in that camp. So we there's a lot of history there. And going into that rifle season, I had a doe tag for that WMU. And we hunt some pretty rugged terrain. And I knew that I was just going to go out and have fun. There's a video on the channel of this as well. My goal of that video was to portray the deer hunting in the mountains and the traditions that are flowing through those hills. And I spent the day before the season filming and capturing everything on my way up to camp. I spent quite a bit of time just trying to gather all this footage of that hunt or of that area and trying to capture the essence of the area that we're hunting in. And opening day, I climbed up to a steep hillside. Honestly, didn't see any deer that day. I went to a different area the following day with just some people that were in camp saying, hey, I saw some doe up here. And I just wanted to get out there and see if I could harvest the doe. I sat on a little point. There was a big bowl, and I sat on a little point that kind of looked down over that bowl. You could see probably 150 yards. And we've had a lot of good success in this area. I've killed some does. I also killed a nice 6-point in there as well. And just sitting there and had the cameras all set up and ready to go, looking down over. And about 2 hours into the day, I hear them coming. They're coming right behind me. And she popped out at 20 yards, and I heart shot her, and she took off down in the bowl and died pretty quick. And that was just an awesome experience, being able to have them come in so close behind me, get it all on film. It was just an awesome, awesome day in the deer woods. I'm not all about hunting bucks. I just enjoy being out there. I'm a weekend warrior type guy. I get a few days of PTO each year. You'd love to get more and just don't get it. So I'm not that picky with what I shoot. I do tend to like to shoot larger bucks in PA and then hold out and shoot maybe some younger deer in Maryland because they don't have point restrictions. So that was the opening weekend of rifle. And then the second weekend of rifle, I actually harvested one down here where I live at my parents' place. We do some deer drives there each year. It's only about 4 acres of woods. We do one push there basically every year, and was able to harvest a nice doe there as well. And then, like the mountain buck Monday story, the last weekend of rifle season, it would have been Thursday night, I basically made a game time decision that I'm going to take PTO and I'm going to go up north and hunt the fresh coating of powder. I was watching some cameras that are like local there that are basically watching what's going on, their weather station cameras. And I was just hoping that there was snow. They weren't quite sure if it was going to fall. And I saw that it got about a half inch, and that was enough for me to make the decision. So I drove up there, and I was basically I parked at one spot and was going to walk to where my buddy Grant was going to pick me up. And it was 4 miles in between there. So my goal wasn't to take my time. I really just wanted to go and find a set of buck tracks and just see if I could track him down and kill him. I've never done that. I've caught up to a lot of bucks and doing that, but I've just never been able to pull the trigger on one. But that was my goal that day. Cut a lot of set of tracks of does. I saw huge groups of does and also did see a rack buck in those 4 miles, but he was running through some high stem count, thick stuff, and just couldn't get a shot at him. So midday, Grant picked me up, and we decided that we were going to drive to the other end of this public land and walk back to my car. So it was 4 miles as the crow flies, 6 miles of hiking just up and down and around the ridges. And we had never been to this area before. We had never run trail cameras in there. We've e-scouted it. And so we parked up there, hiked up to the top. It's a huge ridge system that goes out, just kind of meandering through the woods. And my buddy Grant was going to stay on the top edge of this leeward side and just look down into the bowl and onto the military crest. And I was going to walk the military crest. And we were just going to parallel each other, see if we could bump deer. Kind of had a crosswind that day. So we were just going to see what would happen. We ended up seeing some does. A lot of them were way out ahead of us because it was still pretty loud. The leaves were a little bit crunchy because that snow had actually melted significantly by then. The leaves were a little bit wet, but they were starting to dry out. So it was a little bit tough sneaking, but we just wanted to bump each other around. And our goal was to learn a new area. We'd never been there before, and we just wanted to see what kind of sign we saw and just see if we could see some tails. We'd seen some doe out ahead, and I think he could have shot one doe that was bumped to him that I bumped up, but he didn't have a doe tag, and nor did I. And we were going out through, and we hit this bowl, and there was laurel in this bowl. And about then, I saw a buck rub. And upon first glance at this buck rub, I honestly didn't even think it was a rub. It was about an 11-inch diameter tree that looked dead. And it was just shredded enough that I was like, is that just bark peeling off, or is that actually a rub? And I was looking at it, and I'm like, well, that's a tine mark. And whatever deer is making this, that thing is huge. And then I saw some of the largest scat I've ever seen, some like nickel size scat. And I was like, I got to slow down in here. And so another reason I wanted to slow down was I was on the military crest on the inner side of that bowl, and Grant was up on the top. So he had a lot longer of a walk. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to slow down just in case he would bump down to me. And I'm about halfway through this bowl, and I hear a deer take off, and I see a buck take off, and I'm like, well, that's a shooter. And he stops at about 60 yards, 70 yards out. He was only 50 yards when he jumped up out of the laurel. It was pretty thick. And I threw the gun up, and I actually, and I'll just stop here too. I made a video, a hunt breakdown of this hunt, separate to the actual video that you watched, because there was a lot of details missed. And the shot that I took on this deer, I don't condone with archery equipment. And if you don't feel confident in this shot, don't take it. But what I ended up seeing was I saw the buck run out there and stop. And all I saw was his back leg. And I was like, this deer is not getting away. And I know the anatomy of a deer. So what I ended up doing was taking his femur and his backbone and shooting the femoral artery right off. So I settled the crosshairs, threw the safe, and I shot, and I saw the buck just drop like a bag of bricks. And I took off running, and he was just about dead when I got there. He was only 60 yards out, and I did shoot him again. But in that moment, I've relived this so many times, because in my mind, I try to be an ethical hunter, and I'm rolling this around in my mind. I was like, was that an ethical shot? And it just keeps coming back to me. I have shot that gun. I feel comfortable with it. I know the anatomy of the deer. I know my skill level. And I made it happen in that moment. It was about 15 to 20 seconds from the time I saw that deer to when he was dead. Everything just flowed in that sequence. And what ended up coming out of it was a great hunt and a great buck. So then jumping back into the story, I ran up to the buck and was hooting and hollering as I was going, because Grant was above me, and he had actually stopped to take a leak, and he heard me yelling, and we were just in disbelief of what was happening, because at this point we were 3.5 miles into our still hunt, and we just couldn't believe it. And I'm running up to this thing, and I see that he only has one side, and I didn't realize that when I shot him. And we ran up, and his base was huge, and it was bloody. It was still wet. It didn't look like it was super fresh, but within the last couple of days, like, he didn't drop it when I shot him.
Yeah.
Basically what happened. So we were celebrating, and then after the celebration, I was doing some circles in there trying to find this shed, never could come up with it. But it was honestly a perfect spot for this buck to be. He was deep, and he was in a bowl with a leeward side, and there was actually a trail that was probably a couple hundred yards up on the ridge that people hike. So he could smell what was coming over the top. He smelled the wind coming up, and then he could see down through the laurel and get his thermals rising in that thermal tunnel on that military crest. And it was just honestly perfect. Now, thinking, I went back there late season scouting and couldn't find the shed still. But I don't know if that buck lived there. I don't know if he was the one that made that rub, or if that was some rut activity, because there was very few oaks in there. He had good cover, but the food was just not there like it was other places on this public that we had. So I'm not sure if the pressure of rifle season had pushed him all the way there, or if he actually did live there. I'm not sure, but either way, he was there.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade Short Barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
And I think if I wasn't on his direct line when I was walking through there, he would have let me walk right by, because he let me get to 50 yards before he jumped up because it was so thick. If I was 50 yards above him, I bet you I would have walked right by that deer. And we may have walked by other bucks on those 3.5 miles in some of that laurel too.
Yeah.
And this one just happened to be on my line. So it was a crazy day. And then I shot him at 3:30-ish. So we ended up having to pack him out, and it was 2.5 miles to the car. So that was a long pack out. But I was thankful that Grant was there, that we could split the meat and get him out. But it was just an unbelievable day. And I just replay that hunt all over in my head quite often, and watch the video that I created of the hunt myself quite often as well.
Yeah. That's so cool. And a couple things about that, like to start back with the strategy with the still hunting being next to each other, like that is such a good plan. Actually, my dad and I did that this past gun season. It was like on a Saturday, we were going out, and that's what we did. You know, he went on the upper side and I went on the lower side, and ended up having, he'd bumped, I think, 2 bucks and a coyote to me. One was a really nice buck I wanted to shoot, and I didn't see him quick enough, and you know, he took off down over the hill. But then the next one was like it was a small 6 point that was like at 10 yards from me. You know, it was just a cool experience, and I didn't shoot him. But then a coyote came just ripping down through afterwards. But it's such a good strategy of like, and then I bumped some does to him because, you know, they just, you know, jumped up the other way. But it's a way of like, where you're not, it's not like a traditional drive, because like you're always, both of you are in the game the whole time, but and like you're hunting in a still hunting way, but you're also having the advantage of a little bit of some wind bumping going on too, and just, you know, and sound and everything. Like I think that's such a good strategy when you have a buddy or a family member or something to be able to go out and do. And I've come to love that part of gun season. There was a time of like probably almost 10 years where I despise gun season. Cause all I could put in my head was pressure. And I was like, I don't like that. I don't want to deal with it. And then once I kind of looked at it from a different angle of one, I always liked the camp aspect, and that's what I like gun season for. But I was like, especially after you get past the first couple of days, it's really not that bad as far as pressure goes, at least in the areas that I tend to hunt. And you get to walk more. Like sitting in a tree is fun to an extent, but I like seeing things. I like what you guys did. Like I like being able to go find new areas and just scout it / hunt it at the same time. And you learn so much. Like we were talking about how that buck was living there, and you know, who knows, he could have been pushed there because of pressure, but he had everything to his advantage. And you see it so much with, you know, even like with clear cuts, they're so, I think those deer are so used to being drove too, that they just hold tight until you're like stepping on them, or they'll let you walk right past them. Like you were saying.
Yep. Absolutely. No. And going back to what you were saying about the walking parallel. I mean, that was the first time that I think either of us had really ever done that. And we had this plan that we were just going to try it out, and man, I'm hooked. Yeah. I think I'm going to do it every year from now on because it just works. And I think I can go back to that same area and probably get it done again on another great public land buck, or even another spot that I hunt, anywhere. It works anywhere, either whether you're in rolling hills or you're in the big hills, you can make that kind of hunting work.
Yeah. And two, it is so much nicer when you drop a truck off on one side and one on the other, and you're walking to a point. There's nothing more defeating than turning around and going back, you know, like there's that, like you get way back in and then you're like tired. And it's like, it's even if it's the same distance, I tend to feel more like down when I have to come back, or I get like, you know, kind of mopey and tired as I'm walking through, versus like when you know you have a destination and you're going to that, and you get to see more ground that way as well.
Yep, absolutely. And that was huge that day, because if we would have had to turn around and go back, that's another 3.5 miles that we have to pack this thing out. And it wasn't a small bodied animal, it was quite a bit of weight, so we were happy it was only 2.5 miles.
yeah when I was today when I was shed hunting, it was scouting/shed hunting, it was one of those situations where I wanted to be back by a certain time, and I got way back and I was literally close to another road, and I was like, man, I wish my truck was right here, but yet I gotta, you know, huff it back the other direction. And, that makes sense. And the aspect of, have you packed, animals out before that?
Just does. And it was probably 2. I haven't done it often.
Yeah, it's such a nice way to be able to do it. Like packing a deer out, and I started doing it from hunting out west and learning that was, you know, a necessity to do that. And I'm like, man, this is nice. I don't have to skin it when I get back. I don't have to, you know, after you get done dragging it, it's like I can put all that on my back and just go. I mean, did you have like frame packed to be able to pack it in and everything?
So we had like cheesecloth bags that we did, and then we just had big backpacks. It wasn't like a metal frame or anything. We just started stuffing, and we had a lot of straps. We were strapping it on, honestly, whichever way we could get it out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. It is nice to be able to do that. I carry just like the mine aren't the actual cheesecloth, but the synthetic game bag type of deal. Yeah. I use the same ones I use for elk, and I just put 2 deer quarters in one basically. And they're still, I'm not going to be packing it out long enough where it's going to be a, you know, a breathability issue with the meat or anything, but keeps it nice and clean, allows it to breathe a little bit, and just carry them out that way. And then I just wash them and use them again.
Yep. No, it's a pretty slick system. And honestly, the bucks are getting bigger, like body size. There's less deer, but they're healthier. And they're just getting bigger. So my dad and I used to drag the deer out of where we used to hunt, and those days I think are gone. Sometimes we actually will hang the deer in the tree. We have a pulley system. We hang them in a tree, and if it's late enough in the day and we can't get them out because we're too deep, we'll actually hang them up there and come back the next morning and butcher them in the tree. And then we'll bring in a deer cart, carry out what we want, and then, or what we need, and then put the rest on the deer cart. So that's another way that we do it that works well.
Ah, yeah, so is it like a lightweight pulley system that you just carry in your pack?
It's either in my pack, or if one of us has to go back to the truck and drop like guns and stuff, we'll pick it up and bring it back down. So yeah, it's pretty light. It's just a little block and tackle.
Okay. Gotcha. That's, that's actually a pretty good idea there too. And the ways we used to do it were, and still do it to some extent, but it was either just dragging it and you just usually, you know, I call my family and, you know, you have 3-4 guys that show up and you just kind of take turns, two guys drag and two guys walk behind and then, you know, vice versa and do it that way. But then it went to, it was in Ohio. I think we first started the deer pole where we used like a big just tree basically, and then tied the legs to it and put it over your shoulder, carried it that way. That works to an extent. And then the deer cart method, if you got logging roads or a hiking trail or something, that's still a really good method to be able to get them out to.
Yeah. The deer cart that we actually have, it's probably 30 years old. It's like a wheelbarrow. It has one wheel in the front and we actually tied a handle to it. So the front guy pulls and the back guy pushes. And if there's a log, the front guy just lifts and we just keep going because there's no trails where we are. So we make it work however we can.
Yeah. I was going to say, cause otherwise the regular like two wheeled, game carts or deer carts there, they're not great off trail.
No, they want to tip over and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, most definitely. And there's so many stories of that. And then there's like also the aspect too, that the one thing I don't like about packing them out is there's something about taking it back to camp and hanging it on the pole. Like there's that aspect of it that I love and being able to, and I have done that with a couple of deer just because they were like, big deer and I just wanted to show everybody the whole body and like, you know, be back at camp and just look at it sitting out there. And so I've done it for those reasons. But in West Virginia, I'd shot a doe this past November and literally it was like 100 and some yards from where I could get my truck to. And I still quartered it up and I just threw the quarters over my shoulder and carried it up because I was like, then I don't need to deal with it. The laws as far as bringing stuff back into Pennsylvania, it was like, that's just easier to get it done and taken care of versus the other alternative.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, each hunt seems to be different. I mean, we do it so many different ways. It's one way or another, we're getting out of the woods, whatever makes sense for that scenario. So yeah, we do a lot of different things.
And then do a lot of the areas that you hunt, do they have laurel like that?
No, I will say no. That particular public land, it's spotty laurel. There's little pockets, different places, which helps. There's some public piece that I've been to, it's just like mountainsides. And it's tough to pinpoint bucks in there and deer. But this spot, it was just kind of around the top edge of that bowl was laurel. And other spots that we hunt in there, it's little pockets, a couple acres of it here or there. It's not whole mountainsides. Then the other piece of public is like, I don't think there's any laurel. It's just big timber.
Yeah. Oh, that's a best case scenario. When you get those whole hillsides of laurel, there's one place that I've been hunting that literally the whole top is open, just wide open woods. And then the whole side hill on every direction is just laurel. And it's like, man, like this is super difficult. And I know that there's deer in there and this is like, and they have the oaks right in the laurels, so they don't need to come out, you know, in daylight to go there. It's just actually have a piece that I need to get in there yet this spring and just try to break down. I'm trying to find some holes in the laurel so I can, you know, somehow get in there and be able to hunt because I was like, I'm out of the game hunting outside of it. You know, if they're in the rut, you could catch them cruising the edge or whatever. But other than that, they're feeling pretty good inside there.
Yeah. And I mean, it is a bear to get through some of that stuff too. I shouldn't say there's no laurel in that other spot that I hunt. There's one little pocket. We did a bear drive through it this year and it was that thick that I don't even think bears are living in that. I mean, I saw no deer sign. I had to walk through there with my bow above my head. I was like, this is just absurd. I can't even move through this, let alone a deer or a bear is going to move through. It's like, I wrote that spot off completely for future. Like, I'm not coming back here to hunt. This is ridiculous.
Well, and I don't know about you, but like growing up, it was always, you'd hear, but you know, the biggest bucks live in the thickest stuff that's out there, and whether it be a clear cut or laurel. And it's like, it's not necessarily true as far as like when you get those big, same situation. I went through laurel last spring that was like that. And the further I got into it, there wasn't any sign. Like it, they had to, maybe they'd tunnel in there as far as like, you know, running from other hunters or whatever, but it was all like in those sparse pockets towards the outside. And you even see that with clear cuts and stuff that get really grown up and thick. It's kind of the same situation, because it's like, I don't think they even want to, you know, especially a buck wanting to move, you know, his head through there with, you know, stuff sticking out. Like that would be annoying to try to go through all that.
Yeah. And no, I'm right there with you. Like growing up, it was like the biggest bucks are in these, the deepest, thickest, nastiest stuff. So like some of the biggest buck beds, and actually the biggest shed I've ever found was near a bed that I had an idea of the buck that was living there. It's in a little pine grove where the pine, the limbs don't start to like 6 feet up, and it's just wide open. The buck's just laying in the wide open. There's no brush around at all. It made sense that he was there because he was on the military crest, and he had a bluff behind him, and he could see down. It's like, I think these bucks, they'll put stuff behind them, but they also like that visibility down through, that they can see any danger below them and see what the thermals are coming up with their scent. And I've just, I don't like getting into some of those thick laurel, because it's like you said, I mean, you're 3, 4, 5 year old bucks with really wide racks are not going to want to go through that stuff.
No,
they're going to skirt the edge or bed in the wide open on somewhere that makes sense for them to bed.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they need certain, you know, they need their senses as far as, you know, there's sight, smell, and auditory are the kind of like the main ones, you know, when you look for bedding. And I find that usually they have two of the three. I mean, if they can have all three, that's, you know, that's great. But a lot of times, like in the visual side of it too, is I found that in some really open areas too, that, but it makes sense because you can't get within 200 yards of them, or, you know, they'll see you, smell you, whatever, or hear you coming, especially in those places that have, like when you get the real crunchy leaves and there's a bunch of oak leaves on the ground, man, you can't get close to them. So they have it all kind of figured out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some spots where I hunt too, is I know that there are buck watching me access. I hunt the other side of the road, but I have trail cameras up on the hillside, and I know that they're bedded on that hill watching me and just listening for cars driving by. And if one stops and someone gets out, like they're on high alert then, because they can see you, they can hear you, and they can probably smell you if the thermals are rising up to them, which, how are you going to kill something like that? I mean, unless you can access from the backside, there's ways to do it, but it makes it very difficult when they can see you accessing the spot.
Yeah. That's what my buddy Johnny always says. He's like, when you find a big buck and you're like looking and you figure out where he's bedded at sometimes, and it's like, this is impossible. And it's like, yeah, then that's where he's at. You know?
Exactly
why. And you know, it just takes the right situation or like a situation like you had with that deer, is like, you know, you broke into his bubble and, you know, he jumped out and was curious and, you know, stopped just long enough for it to work. You know, you can find chinks in the armor. It's just not easy.
Yeah. Cause that buck there, he had everything in his favor where he was bedded, but I was coming in basically downwind. It was more of a crosswind. So all he had was his audible at that point. He didn't have a scent or visual. So he needed to get a second sense of what was going on. That's why he stopped to look back to see what I was, whether it was a deer or another predator, and just paused long enough to get him killed.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And so, you know, you were saying about your tradition and your deer camp of being there for like 53 years. So that's been, I mean, you had no choice growing up as far as like, that's what you're going to be as a deer hunter and going to camp. But how do you feel like, your family camp is as strong as it's been, as far as like, is it still like a lot of people going there and stuff, or what do you see from that aspect, the deer camp culture?
Yeah, so we've seen some ebbs and flows. So my grandpa pulled a double wide trailer to this small little lot that he rented, would have been 53 years ago, and actually got the trailer stuck, and they were like, well, we're going to drop it here, and that's where it sits today. And it ranged probably from anywhere from 6 to 12 hunters back then, whatever season it was. There was a few archery hunters that came in and went up there, but it was mainly just rifle hunting. And through the years, we saw some dips where guys went to other cabins or bought their own land. And then actually this past year, we had one of the larger camps we've had in a while. I think we had upwards of 10 or 11 guys in camp, and it was awesome. I mean, you were just so excited to come back at the end of the day and just shoot the breeze and tell stories of what you saw. Now, the deer density isn't great where we hunt, but we're still seeing some deer, and the deer are super smart. I mean, you know, from where you are and just the big woods, these deer know what's going on. Yeah. So you really have to be keen with your senses and how you're accessing spots. But no, I mean, the deer hunting atmosphere at camp is just awesome. I mean, there's bucks hanging on the wall. There's nothing big. I mean, the biggest buck there is probably like a 75-inch 8-point from 40 years ago. And back then, that was an absolute monster. And the stories are awesome. We tell the same stories each and every year. There's one buck up there that it has, I'll call it 3 points on the side, but it's always the talk. It's like, is that buck legal today? Like, is that an inch? It's like a webbed deer. And it's just fun. I mean, we just enjoy going up there. And I enjoy taking my buddies up there that aren't family. And we just have a blast in the hills, whether it's fishing, hunting, scouting, shed hunting, whatever it is. I said in the one video, it's like you'll never want to leave, but you always want to come back. That's just how I view it. And it's so captivating up there.
The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there. Yeah, no, that's awesome to hear too, that like, especially this past year, how it's become, you know, like you had the most people that you had in a while. And cause I mean, I definitely see that culture, not, I don't want to say dying, but it is, you know, it is getting a little bit lower across the board, and there's camps around that are emptier than they used to be. But I in the last even couple of years though, I've seen a little bit of a resurgence, and like in just like I try to introduce people to it that, you know, I become friends with that haven't had that experience, and you know, whether they're from out of state and you know they never had a deer camp, and it's to bring them and then hearing them have the stories or like their experience of it and how special it is because they've never had that, it just makes it so much, you know, makes me appreciate it that much more of that, you know, that I've always had that and been able to have that aspect of, yeah, all different times of the year going to camp. And it's funny because like my camp is really close to my house. Like it's not like, you know, you or you're driving hours to go there. It's very close. You really don't even need it, but it's the idea of having it. You know, we could really just go to someone's house and have everyone there, but that's not the same. You know,
no.
I want to, you know, go to the camp, and you know, we have the outhouse there and not any running water, but somehow we have Direct TV, which is funny, but it's really cool to be able to have that. And you know, my grandpa, I think he bought it, and I just actually did a video with him, so I want to say it was 1990, somewhere around there, so it wasn't as long as yours, so about 25 years. But it is and seeing what it started out was just like this little one room, just like kind of caved in place, and he's done a lot of woodworking and carving, and then taught me to do a lot of that stuff. And he's, you know, refinished it and added a whole nother room onto it. And it's just like seeing it, the evolution of it, and seeing the generations that are coming up, you know, me being a grandson and my cousins and my brother and everybody using it. And I hope that, you know, continues. And I like that, you know, that you're showing that stuff through your videos. And, you know, I'm trying to do that too, to continue to show that and not to say try to make it cool, but make it, show it in a way that people want to do it and, you know, want to be like, oh yeah, I want to see if I can get a couple of buddies of mine or family members to go in and buy a camp, or maybe we start out with renting and seeing if we like it and then, you know, go into that step. But it is something that I definitely look forward to every single year, and we do trips, you know, trips. It's not that far, like I said, but like we'll go there out of the season. You know, we'll go there at least one weekend in the summer just to shoot guns and just go there and have fun and cook out and stuff, and just like different times of the year. So that to me is a super important part of how I've grown up and how I hope to, you know, when I die one day that I'm still doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we were saying too, like trying to get those, maybe a newer hunter into hunting or that tradition. We actually brought up a new guy this year, first time ever hunting. And, we kind of put him through the ringer in these big hills, but he ended up seeing deer. Wasn't able to kill one, but, up there, killing a deer is the icing on the cake. You're really there for seeing the people that you haven't seen that often throughout the year. It's always a tradition. The day after Thanksgiving, everyone packs up and you drive 4 hours north and you're at deer camp. It's like a holiday for us Pennsylvania folk. And it's, yeah, like I said, the harvesting of the deer isn't the biggest thing. It's the camaraderie and just sharing the stories from other hunts throughout the year in other areas, or just reliving the past. And I know at our camp, we have a photo album of, I'd say probably 95% of the deer harvested there all the way back to 1973, something like that. So it's fun just to flip through and see all the deer that came off the hills. Some years you had 12 hanging on the meat bowl, some years you didn't have any. Now you're seeing some of the bigger bucks come through. You're not killing as many, but the bucks are just bigger and the herd's a lot healthier. It makes it tougher to get some of those people into hunting, because you're not seeing a ton of deer. But
yeah,
we're trying to show that it's not about necessarily the kill all the time. It's about the story, the traditions, and just enjoying time with family and friends in the hills.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, for me, and I'm, you know, we're kind of different. Well, I mean, you have limited time, like others do too, but like, I like that there's healthier deer now, like seeing, you know, the bodies are huge on them, you know, and then they're getting age on them, and they're, you know, obviously the racks are getting bigger too, but like all of that to me, I'll take a little bit of that trade off versus seeing a bunch of deer, but I get how that would be difficult for younger people. I mean, it was difficult for me when I was 12. I felt like the population was at like the lowest that I've seen. I think it's actually better now than it was then, but it was like, oh, that would suck going out, and I'd be like, look like the Michelin man with all my clothes on, sitting out there with my dad in our double, you know, ladder stand, and you know, just trying to see a deer, you know, to be able to get a shot at. But it, like you said, it's so much more than just that, the camp aspect of it. And if you can bring people into that and show them that, I think they can get past the point of, you know, maybe not seeing a deer every single day that they're out.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of to go back to it, it also is tough for people, especially in our generation, to get into this because it costs money to do this. I know when my grandpa pulled the trailer up there in the early 70s, we rented that plot of land for $50 a year for the first 25 years. You're not sniffing that these years, like today. The second 25 was $100 a year. And it's like that, you can't do that everywhere. So it costs money to not only get there, but to have a place to stay, whether you're in a camper or in someone else's Airbnb or a camp. It all costs money, and with inflation, it's making it difficult across the board for people to get into it, especially in our generation, and which is sad because I have so many memories up there that I would just love to share those with my buddies and people that haven't experienced that, because I love hunting so much. I want everyone to experience what I've experienced. And it's tough to do that in this day and age sometimes.
Oh, you're 100% spot on. The one thing that I've seen people do, and I think it's a good way to, it's not the same traditional way that we've had it, but even where you go to a place where you can camp and mm-hmm. people set up tents and, you know, it's obviously not as comfortable as being able to have a camp, but it's a way to still have that camaraderie and be able to have a fire at night and be able to hang out. Like there's a lot more of those, you know, public land camps that are popping up, like a, you know, mobile camp sort of deal. And I think that's really neat, is like kind of a way to combat it a little bit. And, because you're right, like it's not, I mean, the prices of camps are, you know, for something that's, you know, a lot of times not like kind of a dump, you know, still costs a lot of money and the land, and then you get the taxes and then the upkeep and all that kind of stuff. That's definitely not easy to be able to do. A little bit, you know, harder than it used to be.
Yeah. And especially from where I'm coming from, I'm 4 hours away from our camp. I can't just go up there every weekend and maintain the place. Like, and a lot of people are in that same boat, which makes it difficult too. Now my grandpa has now passed away, but my uncle has taken over with his family, and they go up quite often and maintain it. And I'm super grateful that they have, but I know for myself, I wouldn't be able to do that in my current situation. I wouldn't be able to go up there every other weekend and make sure everything's okay and mow the grass, take care of the utilities, what have you. It's not feasible for me and a lot of other folks too.
Yeah, no, you're spot on with that. And definitely helps when you have people that can help out and pull weight in certain situations or whatever. And I think the ideal situation would be for somebody, like if there was like two people that were going in on a camp together, one to have more of the money that helps with the financial side, but not the time to take care of it. And then the other person have a little bit more time to you know, do the upkeep. And that was like, but you know how that goes. That's not always cut and dry.
Yeah, no, that's kind of where I'm at. I feed a couple bucks here and there for when I stay up there for utilities, and then they're able to take care of it. So no, I totally understand that.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Kind of switching gears a little bit, I wanted to touch base back when you were talking about hunting in September and, like, you know, you go to Maryland and stuff. That's not something I've done a lot of whitetail hunting in September. Honestly, I don't know. Yeah, I don't think I've really ever whitetail hunted in September that I can remember. What is different about hunting at that time of year, you know, versus even into October?
Yeah, so you got to get past the mosquitoes. That's one thing, and the heat. I mean, there's been days where I've been standing in a tree stand and just dripping sweat. It's 82 degrees out, but we've been off of deer season since the end of January down there. And we're just itching to go out there. And like I said, I'm a weekend warrior, so I don't care what the weather is. I don't care if it's pouring down raining or if it's 82 degrees or 10 below zero. Like, I'm going to be out there hunting when I can get out. And September is no different than that. So we're still hunting the food sources close to bedding. It doesn't really change a whole lot. Down there, we hunt some more ag field, like agricultural land. So you're kind of bouncing around, seeing where the deer are moving to, what fields they're going to, whether it's corn or beans, and just trying to get where the deer are at that time of the year. The bucks have either started or are about to start their transition to their fall range. They're still in their summer range down there. I don't think I've ever actually killed a buck in September down there. Been close a couple times, but you're still trying to hunt them in their summer pattern. Whereas in Pennsylvania, when it's October, you're basically full into their fall range, or very close to their full fall range. So honestly, in Maryland, summer scouting is kind of more important to me than it would be in Pennsylvania, because I need to know where the deer are going to be in early season, the middle of the year, and late season. Whereas here in Pennsylvania, in my hunting, the hunting span that I am, Pennsylvania is mid season and late season for me per se. So I'm hunting their fall range and their winter range only, whereas Maryland, it's all three. So there's some more scouting that's involved in running trail cameras, but the hunting aspect doesn't change a whole lot. It's more or less just trying to find food sources and their bedding, and trying to get on them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like putting two and two together with the summer scouting being so much more important. I mean, that makes total sense because of them being in that. And I see it even when I run cameras in PA, you know, from the summer all the way through the fall. And it's like, there's a lot of times in September, I'm like, man, I wish I could hunt, because like they're on some sort of a pattern where then it seems like if you can find that pattern, whether that's like, you know, in northern PA and other parts of PA too, but when you have cherry trees, the black cherries, they tend to be scooped up sometimes before the season even starts, or just really get through the first week. But when they're dropping in September, it's like, oh man, like you can, you know, you could get on some deer based on having that. And it's almost like having, you know, agricultural fields to be able to work off of. And like with those food sources in September for you, are you looking at like more like mass crops, or like as far as like acorns and fruit trees or anything, or is it more agricultural?
So the one spot in particular that I talk about, there's a bedding area, a draw, and then a more or less a flat with oaks on it. And then on the other side of a road, there is ag fields. So in this instance, I am hunting the deer coming out of the bedding, going to the mass crops as a staging area for them to go out to the agricultures late in the day or even at night. So I'm hunting that mass crop with the understanding that they're going to the ag fields. So hunting that transition and just trying to find the trails and hunting those trees that are producing that year. Not every year those trees are going to produce, but my summer scouting tells me, all right, the acorns are going to fall here. This is where I need to be at the top of this draw where the deer are going to funnel in, and then they're going to come out of the ag fields. And then vice versa, that'd be for a morning sit. That'd be for an evening sit. And then in the morning, it's vice versa. I'm hunting where they are more or less coming in from those ag fields, maybe stopping at that staging area, but more or less doing a straight line to bedding. So understanding how their morning activity and their evening activity functions, so I can hunt accordingly. Most midday, I'm not hunting all day sits in September. It's just way too hot to do that. So I will go back to the truck, regroup. If I want to hunt the same area, I'll shift a little bit and just hunt the trails where they're going to come out of the bedding instead of going into it in the morning.
Yeah, that's a good scenario where you have like, you know, there's destination at some point, and you know it is kind of nice. I know of even places, there's other states that have that, where you almost have like a lot of the deer bedding on public, that you know they'll be up high and then they kind of have some mass that's in between, and then eventually they get down low, and it's like at least you have like a direction of travel versus, you know, not, you know, as far as they can, you know, be feeding anywhere or just browsing, so to speak. So that is nice to be able to work off of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the deer numbers are pretty good down there. And with them being in the agriculture, and especially if it's corn, they have the cover in there that they will honestly stay in that corn longer into the morning. So I find myself sitting a little bit longer early season, maybe to that 10 or 11 o'clock range, because those deer may not come through till 8, 9, 9:30, because they have the cover in the corn. Whereas it's beans, they would have to be bedded to be secluded. And they may not stay in there into the morning, and they may come back a little bit earlier. So I like beans a little bit more, because it forces the deer out. Whereas with corn, they could stay in there all day long, and they could just bed in the corn, stand up and eat, and bed and stand up and eat, and just do that all day long, and they'd never have to leave. And that's private. So they could do that if they're feeling pressure, especially if a big buck's in the area. He can just go out there and live in the cornfield until it's cut, And by the time it's cut, I'm probably in Pennsylvania and not hunting them anymore. So yeah. there's so many different tactics that I use throughout Maryland and PA, just depending on the season. So there's a lot of different things that I have to learn and understand as I go throughout the season each year.
Yeah. And I think that's where, like, and again, from watching some of your videos and then just hearing you talk, like, that's where just really being a woodsman and just kind of picking up on the things that you're seeing and then just kind of adapting to it in real time of like, all right, this is what's, these are the facts that are presented here. You know, what can I do to be able to intercept them or to be able to hunt them efficiently? And I've even come to, you know, even just in Pennsylvania, where I'll have spots that instead of trying to figure out how to hunt a specific area from October 1st to January 15th, I'll have certain spots that are like, okay, here are my early season, you know, places because they have better food sources that, you know, if there's, you know, cause like there's a lot of places that I hunt that don't have any oak trees or any mast crop, which I like hunting that during the rut because it's consistent because they're browsing. So year after year patterns are pretty similar, but trying to hunt that early season on just browse is really difficult. It's kind of like throwing a dart at the map and hoping something sticks, but you know, that I could have better luck if I'm hunting more, you know, oak trees, or I can find some apple trees or something where I'll have that. So like, right now, my whole like spring scouting thing is like, I'm going out and I'm finding, you know, my rut sign. I have my rut spots and then my early season places. The only time that ever changes is if I'm like really set on one deer, which usually is super difficult to, I usually don't have that figured out where I can, you know, basically have a chance of killing them in all the seasons. It's, you know, one part of the season or another is, you know, more likely than another, but that's just something that I've done even in PA, and like how you're doing it in different states of having like those different strategies and different places to go.
Yeah. And I think we're a little bit different in that sense. So for you, this, you're in the hunting industry. So you can take a couple of days here and there, and, or I shouldn't say here and there, you can take a span of days and basically try and map out, this is what these deer are doing this time. For me, it's a little bit different because I'm hunting basically Saturdays. So from the first Saturday of September to the second to the first Saturday of October, that's a big gap.
Yeah.
And deer could be doing completely different things. So I need to know or have an idea of what the deer are doing between basically each Saturday or different times of the year, because I'm hunting when I can. I can't just pick up and go for a week and try and nail down something that's happening during that span of time. I'm limited to one day a week, maybe two. So just, there's a lot that I have to learn. So I'm trying to be a jack of all trades and not necessarily being a master of one. It's
yeah.
Kind of how it works out to be.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And that's the reality for most, and up until, you know, 2 years ago, that was exactly, you know, what I was doing too. So it was like, I totally understand it. And it's like, you gotta take what you can get and be able to work with it. And I like, you know, even what you're talking about in Maryland, it's like, there's more deer there than you're able to go down there and fill the freezer and be able to like, okay, we're good. We got this stuff in here. Then you can breathe a little bit because, you know, yep. It's like, all right, if you're asking to leave every Saturday and go hunting, it's like, you better be bringing home some meat at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't start hunting Maryland until about 4 years ago. And I archery hunted quite a bit, and I was recurve hunting from 2012 for the next like 6 or 7 years. It's like, I didn't kill anything in those seasons unless it was a deer here and there, a rifle. But going to Maryland and being able to harvest a deer in September, a deer early in October, is like, man, this just took the weight off my shoulders. Now I can just go out and have fun. Not that I didn't have fun in those hunts early season, but it is different having some meat in the freezer, and it allows me to be a little bit more picky in PA. The last couple of years, I've tried to be a little bit more picky with what I've shooting. Now, I'm not going after a 4, 5, 6 year old buck, but a nice, decent rack buck, a mountain buck is what I'm looking for. And it's just been a blast being able to hunt both states different times of the year. And honestly, just having a blast doing it. And I've killed quite a few deer just doing it. I'm more or less a meat hunter to the other people that may be listening. It's like, I will go out there and harvest the doe. I've done it in the rut. It's like, I'll just say it. I've done it in the rut, yeah. And I don't feel there's anything wrong with it. I just enjoy getting out there and harvesting a deer. It's not what it's all about, but I enjoy doing it.
there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And also that makes you more efficient and more of a killer per se when it comes down to, like, you know, the shot that you had to make with the gun there. Like, you're super confident in it. You've been in this situation where you're under pressure shooting at an animal, you know, multiple times throughout the year. You can keep yourself composed and do that. And that comes with repetition. You know, that's something I always say is a detriment of myself, where some of it has to do with the lower deer density. So I just don't feel comfortable shooting does in certain areas. So I don't. But then there's also, I get so infatuated with shooting a buck that, you know, I'll be like, oh, I'll shoot a doe after I kill a buck. Well, sometimes that just takes a little longer. Yeah. So, like, you know, and it's like you don't get those repetitions in of, and it, not saying it's this game of how many you can stack up, but what I'm saying is, like, by being able to have that, you know, practice per se, or by being able to shoot multiple animals a year, like, you become super efficient and you learn how to your body responds in those high stress moments and those high anxiety times when you have a deer. Because, like, believe me, like, I can watch a doe walk past me and I don't get excited, but as soon as I decide that I want to shoot that doe, I get just as excited as I do with a buck. And yep. That's how I am. And I hope that never goes away. I just, you know, hope that I continue to learn how to control how to deal with it. But it's one of those, it's just that repetition definitely helps in those scenarios.
No, and you're exactly right. And for me, being a filmer, that even elevates it to the next level, where if I'm killing a doe, yeah, I still get jacked about it and I'm still trying to get that shot. But when that buck steps out, it's like, I've practiced this. I know what I need to do in the moment to get my bow, get the cameras all turned on and on the deer. And it doesn't make it necessarily easier, but you're prepared for that moment. I know, looking back in 2017, I killed my first archery buck here locally on some heavily hunted public land. And I'd watched the deer for a long time. He was coming to a clear cut to bed. He was out feeding on some oaks. And I drew back on this deer. He's at 20 yards. And I just happened to peep down at the LCD screen of my camera, and he wasn't there. So, and I was like, I am getting this buck on film. So at full draw, I leaned over and adjusted the camera and came back up and shot him. And it's just those things where it's like, you learn in the moment, all right, this is what I need to do, and this is what I can do and get away with to get that buck on film. Now, there's some that I absolutely can't get on film, but that instance, I was like, I know I can get this on film, and I practiced things like that, and it just worked out, and I smoked him at 20 yards on film. Just worked out that way.
That is hilarious. You did that at full draw. Like, I couldn't imagine, because I struggled doing it even when I'm not even drawn back yet, you know. It's funny. I don't know if you had watched it, but I had a video. I think it came out last year, but the hunt was from 2 years ago, where I'd shot a buck in PA. I self-filmed the whole thing from the beginning of the season to November 4th when I shot him. And he was coming in. I knew where he was going to come. And I had my camera off to the side, and I had it there. And, like, you just see the camera float. You know, sometimes I do that. Like, goes like this, to where all you see is his antlers come through. Oh, you know, the body below. It was like 14 yards wide open. Jeez. And I'm like, man, you know, it's like, that was better than the year before when I never even set up the camera. I got in the tree and I'm like, you know, it's opening day. Like, I had a good feeling about it, but it's never happened for me on opening day before. So I was like, you know, whatever. And then, of course, again, same situation, 14 yards, perfect example, the biggest archery buck I've ever shot. And it's like, and my camera was just sitting there off. I'm like,
wasn't that the one? It was in the 140s.
Yeah, 147.
That's a monster.
I know. Oh my gosh, it was incredible. It was like I was like, this would have been like so cool to, and I literally just bought the camera on my first that's when I was really like deciding I was going to get into self film, and that was only at 2021, so it was only 3 years ago. But I was like, I'm finally going to get into it. I bought a handy cam there, and I was like, I'm going to do it. And first day of going to use it, I didn't even set it up. I was just like, so I'm so mad at myself at that point. Now it's like, at least get it up and like practice with turning it on. And, you know, if I end up missing the shot, it is what it is, but at least I'm going through the reps, and eventually, you know, I'll get it figured out. So, yeah. You know, like we were talking about earlier, it's just like, even with like you building the YouTube channel, it's just like with the camera with me, it's like, I just got to start by taking it with me every time and then setting it up. And then I'll eventually get it. Like, don't put the pressure on myself of doing it. Just keep doing the thing, and eventually it's going to work out. And then you'll learn things to get better at doing it. And
yeah, it took me 6 years to get my first kill on film, self filming. So there was a lot of years of practice, and kind of going back to what you said, the craziest things happen to you in the deer woods when the camera is not rolling, and it happens all the time. So it's like, my biggest buck ever, I shot it with a recurve here locally, and I wasn't even planning to hunt this night, and I was target practicing because I had been practicing all summer long, and I went to my parents' house to practice because I couldn't shoot at my house because we live in town. I had 25 minutes till dark, and I was like, I'm going to go hunt. I have no cameras. I've done no scouting. I know nothing about what's out there this year. It's 4 acres of just field and woods, and I knew of this one maple tree, so I literally went out there, scaled the tree by hand, and was facing a cornfield, and I was expecting them to walk the edge of the cornfield. Well, he came in behind me at 10 yards, and I drilled him with the recurve. It's like, I'm standing on a limb in my sweatpants, muck boots, and t-shirt, and I was in the tree for 15 minutes, and he walks out. It was a perfect east wind. He didn't know what was going on because it's not the prevailing wind. And I just caught him off guard, and it's my biggest buck to date to do it with the recurve. It was my first and only ever deer with the recurve. It's like, and I didn't even have a camera to portray this story. Like, I had to call my buddies, like, can you go get my camera and bring it here? And like, I went back the next day and was filming everything again. It's like, this is insane, but I tried to portray it as best I could, but the craziest things happen when you don't have the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. I was thinking about in January, it was my last day in flintlock season that I was hunting, and me and my dad were out, and we were cutting buck tracks in the snow. So he got on the track, and what I would do is I'd go way out ahead and just basically set up in the direction I thought the deer was going, not really having a clear idea. Well, he had bumped a coyote, and it ran to literally it. So I was watching a squirrel on a log, and I heard something. I was under a bunch of hemlocks, and I look up, and there's a coyote coming, and it went to 5 feet from me, and my flintlock goes click, and it's right there. But I have my 360 camera that I had, and I never turned it on.
Oh.
So it's like, and I just, you know, one of those, I was like, you know how cool that would have been? Like, I have never had that happen before. The thing almost ran me over. You know, I thought I was going to, you know, hit it with my stock of self-defense, and
that'll probably never happen again.
No, unfortunately. Won't. it's really funny, but it's just in general, there's so many funny and cool things that happen out in the woods, and you know, I'm just thankful to get to experience them, whether the camera's on or not. I mean, it's cool to be able to see it happen and go through it. I actually thinking of something weird and coyotes. I was pulling a camera today, and I think I'm going to post a clip of it, but I had a camera on video mode, and I love running trail cameras on video mode. And this one has like really good audio, and there's two coyotes that are fighting on the camera. So I guess maybe you would know, and I don't know this answer, but I always thought coyotes like breeding season was like end of January through like beginning of March, somewhere in there. Well, this was right before Christmas, And it kind of looked like the one was trying to breed the other one, but almost like dogs, like being playful sort of deal. But they were making the most, you know, the craziest sounds of, you know, just like, you know, and they're fighting each other and they're nipping. And the one would, like, you know, play with each other kind of like dogs would out in the yard. So it's super cool. There's like 3 15-second clips in a row of them just like messing around right at the scrape on this camera. Wow. So
were they full size coyotes?
Yeah, seemed like it. Yeah.
That's crazy. I know nothing really about coyotes, so I have no idea, but that's really wild.
I didn't know. You look like someone that, you know, maybe you do some trapping or something like that.
I've done any trapping.
Well, you know, usually guys that are, you know, hunting with a recurve or something, they got into trapping at some point. But I don't know enough. You know, it's like I spend all my time learning deer. I don't know enough about coyotes. I've hunted them a little bit, but not. Mm-hmm. Not enough, but it was really cool. And I've gotten videos where coyotes howling on camera too, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. And you were talking about the recurve, and you were saying you were out working on a bow in your garage. Is that where you're in your shop before this? So you're building a bow?
Yeah. So my goal from basically childhood up was to build a bow and harvest a deer. That was my like number one goal. 2011, I shot my first archery deer with a compound. The following year, I got into recurve hunting and I bought that recurve. But there was always this thing in the back of my mind. I was like, man, I really want to build a bow and harvest a deer. I enjoy woodworking. I do it quite often. And this year I was like, all right, I'm going at it. So for the last probably month and a half, I've been building a hickory bow. It's backed with bamboo. It's a reflex deflex style longbow, and it's going to be a documentary. So I'm filming the entire thing, and I'm going to try and harvest a deer with it. I'm not going to hunt solely with it in the upcoming season, but I'm going to try and kill deer with it the next couple seasons and try and get it on film and just kind of complete that documentary. Show the entire process of me building the bow in the shop. It's not a how-to video. It's just simply me building it to music so people can enjoy it, and then me taking it out and hunting. So I'm probably 95% complete with the bow. I got to build the quiver and the arrows yet. So got quite a bit of work on that, and then I got to practice all summer long. So there's a lot going on yet that needs to happen before I can take it in the woods.
Oh, that's so cool. And like, how did you learn to do that? Was that through YouTube and stuff, or like, how are you learning to build the bow? I know you have the woodworking background, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the woodworking background helps. It was self-taught. I really enjoyed woodworking from little on up. So that was more or less self-taught. I've read some books on bow making, and YouTube has been a huge aspect of it. Just there's a couple guys that I follow in there that kind of walk you through step by step. And I've just been following them, doing research as I go. And honestly, it's been working out great. And the bow's looking awesome.
Awesome. That's so cool. I'll be excited to see it when you're done. And woodworking's it's such a cool thing to be able to do. It takes some patience I haven't done it in so many years, but my grandpa was really big into carving and making gun cabinets and clocks and all these different things. And so I learned to do that. And in college, that's how I'd make money, was I'd build these big gun cabinets and I'd carve deer and turkey scenes into it do it. And honestly, what I learned with myself was when I did it, when I was trying to sell things to make money, I didn't enjoy it anymore. And then I just kind of stopped and haven't went back to it. But I think I would enjoy it again if I just, you know, did it for me when it was a project like I was working on for myself. Like I really enjoyed it. But when it was like, oh, you know, if someone would be like, I'd post a picture on Facebook and I'd have like, you know, a couple people be like, oh, I want you to, you know, build this for me. And then it was like I had a timeline and all these things. And I just, it turned it into something more than I was looking for. But people that, you know, when woodworking takes a lot of detail and some patience and everything to it. So I'm super excited to see how that turns out for you.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm stoked to be able to be this far and have basically a functioning bow. I've already shot it a couple times. It's not quite complete, but it shoots sweet, man. I can't wait to take it to the woods.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Brandon, I really appreciate all your time and taking time out of your evening there from the family to come on and chat. But like, I really enjoyed this conversation and getting to talk to you about your story that you submitted with Mountain Bug Monday, and then just overall, and just it's so easy to hear through the way that you speak about it and how much you enjoy hunting and just getting out there and the whole process of it. So man, I appreciate you first of all sending the story and then agreeing to come on the podcast.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you for having me. This has been a blast. I always enjoy just shooting a breeze about deer hunting and beyond, and can't wait to basically get into another deer season and learn some more. So yeah, thanks again.
Yeah, heck yeah. Well, tell everybody where they can find and follow along with all your stuff. And we'd reference the YouTube channel a few times in here, but just give everybody a place they can find you.
Sure. So you can follow us at The Everyday Outdoorsman. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Post a lot of content there. And then Facebook and Instagram are also two big platforms that we're posting. We're posting quite often. And deer hunting is our biggest thing, but we try and post throughout the year just what we're doing. We try and speak to the everyday outdoorsman. So we try and do it all. But yeah, follow us and like us on all platforms and enjoy the content that we're putting out.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. And yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, share it with your buddies. Leave us a rating, a review, and subscribe. If you want to check out more content like this, there's plenty in the links below. We truly appreciate having you guys along with us.